I entirely missed the welcome because I've been running around trying to sort out laptop problems. I think God didn't like something about the first draft of what I was going to say, so I've had to rewrite it from memory. I think I've managed most of it. But if there's any key insights from Haggai that you know that I've missed, then I assure you they were on the first draft. So as I'm sure you've been told, but I didn't hear, we are being asked to join in with a series of major points from minor prophets that the church is currently doing, and we've got Haggai. Haggai is a great book, and I really encourage you to read it for two primary reasons. First of all, it's really, really short. It's only two chapters long, and one day you will go to heaven, I hope, if we do our job properly. And you will meet Haggai in heaven, and he'll go, "Hey, did you read my book? It was only two chapters long. Surely you had time at some point." And if you haven't read it, you're going to have a very embarrassing conversation with Haggai about not having read his book. The second and probably more worthy reason why you should read Haggai is that it is a great encouragement to a people who are rebuilding their lives and their relationship with God following disaster. It's addressed to the Israelites who have just returned from exile, something we've been hearing about throughout all of these minor prophets. And this is why we have our welcome home banner here at the top. Haggai is a great prophetic welcome home. Welcome back to Israel, to your land that you were promised. Welcome back to being in the covenant with God that was broken, hence the exile, and has now been restored in this grand return. The book takes place, first of all, in the second year of King Darius, which is in 520 BCE, or BC. Something we can also read about in Ezra. So we have this account from more than one place. The initial return was actually under Cyrus, who was Darius's predecessor. So this is a little bit down the line. But there's a problem. We know there's a problem because someone is prophesying about it, and where there's a prophet, there's a problem. The problem is that Israel hasn't properly embraced their return from exile. The temple, the symbol of their relationship with God, is still in ruins, as it was left by the invasion that exiled them in the first place. Ezra likewise describes this about how they were doing their worship, all of their festivals, all of their sacrifices on an altar, but an altar that stood in the burnt out skeleton of the temple. The little bits in the ruins that were still left were the backdrop for their worship, nowhere near as grand or as resplendent as God deserves or as it used to be. Need to open my Bible here, that would be very helpful. So this is how the book of Haggai begins. This is what the Lord Almighty says. These people say, the time has not yet come to rebuild the Lord's house. What do you mean the time hasn't yet come? What they're busy doing is rebuilding all of their own houses. They're busy trying to cultivate fields and put their life back on track. But they've entirely forgotten about the very heart of their worship in Jerusalem, this site that is absolutely central. This is still in ruins. They find themselves too busy to rebuild. The prophet says, is it a time for you yourselves to be living in your panelled houses while this house remains a ruin? They're quite happy making their own houses, but not God's. Seems like an odd priority to me. But does that sound familiar to anyone? And if you're feeling too busy with life, but your relationship with God is a kind of burnt out shell of what it once was, that doesn't sound dissimilar to me, and I'm sure some of you have similar experiences. Maybe something in the past has hit you. Maybe some disaster like the invasion, grief, a big life-changing experience, a change in routine or occupation. But maybe your relationship with God has fallen into disrepair. It's just been a bit neglected. To keep the temple analogy, you haven't been polishing the stonework and putting new varnish on it, so the whole thing started to gradually crumble and fall apart a bit, and you're left with this burnt-out shell of a relationship, something that was once much greater than it now is. And you know you need to rebuild it. You know it doesn't look good. But it's a big, daunting task. God is big. And that big is great, but it's also sometimes scary. And you think of reasons not to do it. You've got other things to do. You've got things that seem really pressing, things that can't really wait. So you say, the time has not yet come to rebuild the Lord's house, and you put it off. But just as the Israelites did exactly the same thing, God sends Haggai. He sends his prophet to speak to them as that call. And Haggai says to them, come, rebuild the temple. Rebuild your relationship with God and put him back in the center of your life and of your city, of your capital city. In exactly the same way God comes to us. We read at the beginning, the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai. That word of the Lord is a common motif in all prophecies. But then that's how God speaks to them and through them. And God does exactly the same thing to us. But who do we know who is called the word? From John 1? Jesus. It's always Jesus. It's a bit of a spoiler, isn't it? But Jesus is the one who speaks to us. Jesus is the one through whom God speaks to us to call us back to mend that relationship that's been broken and burnt out. And the Spirit also speaks to us. We have this much closer relationship with God after the incarnation. We don't need him to send prophets to speak to us for him. He speaks to us through the Spirit into our very own lives. And so in the same way that Haggai calls Israel back to relationship, God often, frequently, repetitively calls us back to fix that burnt out shell of a relationship that used to be. And one of the great things I love about Haggai is that in terms of prophets, it's really, really unusual. Because we read here at the end of chapter 1, then Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, who's the governor, and Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the whole remnant of the people obeyed the voice of the Lord their God and the message of the prophet Haggai, because the Lord their God had sent him and the people feared the Lord. So the Lord stirred up the spirit of these people with long names and the spirit of the whole remnant of the people. They came and began to work on the house of the Lord Almighty their God on the 24th day of the sixth month. They actually did it. That's cause for celebration. So many of the prophets in this book speak to a deaf people who never respond to the things that are said. But when Haggai says to the people, to the governor and the high priest, come back, rebuild, they actually do it. It's amazing. And yeah, pretty unprecedented. And in just the same way that they respond and they rebuild the temple, they start work, we can do exactly the same thing. Seeing so many people in the Bible ignore prophecy can be really off-putting. I don't know if any of you have thought the same thing. But they did it. They responded. It's not impossible. It's not like there's something in a fallen human nature that cannot listen. We just often don't. But we can. There's a bit of a further problem, as Haggai goes on in chapter 2. And that is that the new temple that they're building, as they get to work, isn't quite as they remember the first one. The first temple was built by King Solomon. It was such a grand project that David was told he wasn't allowed to do it. It took absolutely years, and there's long descriptions in the book of Kings about the cedars that were brought from Lebanon, the gold that was brought in to make this glorious spectacle. And in Haggai chapter 2, we read, "Who of you is left who saw this house in its former glory? How does it look to you now? Does it not seem to be to you like nothing?" They're clearly a bit disappointed. And we see exactly the same thing again in Ezra. I like comparing between the books because it shows you a thing that actually happened. We read in Ezra 3 when they reestablished the temple. "But many of the older priests and Levites and family heads who had seen the former temple wept aloud when they saw the foundation of this temple being laid, while many others shouted for joy. No one could distinguish the sound of the shouts of joy from the sound of weeping, because the people made so much noise, and the sound was heard far away." There's that mixture of joy and of sorrow at this re-established temple being not quite what they hoped it was going to be. And again, when we rebuild our relationship with God, sometimes it's not quite what it used to be. We seem disappointed. We look back at the closeness that we used to have and think, is this really it? Sometimes that's because we're comparing to other people. I know often I look at my own prayer life, and I once read the biography of Hudson Taylor, who had an absolutely amazing prayer life. He'd be up in the morning before anyone else praying and reading his Bible for hours. And when I look at my own prayer life, I go, this seems a little bit rubbish. Is this really it? I have that kind of mix of joy and weeping. I'm like, great, I'm doing something, but it seems so rubbish. But that's because I'm comparing to someone else. I think we do that quite a lot. We're not all Hudson Taylor, although I think we should probably all aspire to it in the end. And sometimes it doesn't seem up to scratch because of that nostalgia. Because we're looking back at a relationship and thinking, that was great. It probably wasn't as good as we think it was. We're probably only remembering the highlights. And sometimes, I admit, genuinely, it's not as good as it used to be. Maybe that's because you're still rebuilding and you've got further journeying to go. Maybe that's because something's just a little bit off. It's just a little bit different to the way things used to be. But again, Haggai offers an amazing encouragement later on in chapter 2 in this passage where God is pointing out that they're so disappointed at the temple. Let's find my references. So we read from verse 4, which actually follows straight on from what I just read. But now be strong, Zerubbabel, declares the Lord. Be strong, Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest. Be strong, all you people of the land, declares the Lord, and work. For I am with you, declares the Lord Almighty. This is what I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, and my spirit remains among you. Do not fear. The glory of this present house will be greater than the glory of the former house, says the Lord Almighty. And in this place I will grant peace, declares the Lord Almighty. See, the glory of this present house will be greater than the glory of the former house. That's completely contrary to what they think. They're looking at it and they're thinking, this sucks. This is nothing like our old one. And God's going, nah, this is going to be better. And how does he phrase that better? In terms of glory. When God talks about glory, what he's talking about is his presence in the temple. The glory of God was actually manifested as a cloud in the first temple. And so when he says the glory of this present house will be greater than the glory of the one that came before, he's saying, I'm going to be here more than I was before. It's my presence here that is going to make this so much better. I know it doesn't look like it used to. I know you don't have as much cedar, you don't have as much gold, you've not polished the marble quite as shining as it used to be. You're missing a couple of porticos here and there. But I'm here. That's what God says. I'm here. And I am here way more than I used to be, which means this is so much better. It doesn't matter what it looks like. What matters is it's God's in it. So when everything falls apart a bit for us, and our relationship with God seems like it's not what we used to be, God calls us. He calls us through his word, he calls us through his spirit to come back and fix that relationship. And even when we've done our best and it doesn't quite look like it used to be, God comes to us and says, hey, I'm here. And that's all that really matters.